On the Record
on News Talk,
brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. It all adds up to the new equation.
Should we consider issuing vaccines to more vulnerable people when there's so much of the world that still doesn't have any vaccinations at all? Well, we're joined on the line by spokesperson for the World Health Organization, Margaret Harris. Margaret, thanks very much for taking your call this Sunday morning. Before we talk about that, can you give us a general overview of exactly how the world is doing right now in terms of COVID infections?
Yes, indeed. So we are still in the midst of a huge pandemic. We're still seeing very large numbers of cases. It's driven largely by Europe, in fact, but also by North America. The countries still recording the largest number of cases are the United States of America, followed by the United Kingdom and other European countries. Now, the good news is deaths are dropping. We're seeing the lowest numbers of deaths in a year, which is good news, but for many people are still dying. And so, you know, being in a situation where you're very sick and dying, that doesn't sound particularly like good news if other people are not dying. But it does show that where populations are getting vaccinated, there's been a decoupling of the number of cases and the number of deaths. So the vaccines are protecting people from getting severely ill and from dying.
Although there is a general decoupling, I suppose the link isn't totally severed, because obviously if people are going to die as a result of COVID-19, they have to have contracted it in the first place. Does it strike you as being a little worrisome that the areas of the world that have the highest diagnosed case numbers are those which already have the highest vaccination rates?
Yes, indeed. And that shows that you still have populations within those populations, subpopulations, groups who are not getting vaccinated. And that means that the focus in those countries needs to be on why you have large numbers of people who are not vaccinated. Are there people who don't trust the vaccine? Are there people who can't get access to the vaccine? It could be for linguistic reasons. They don't know where to go. They don't know how to get the vaccine. So there is still an enormous amount of work to do, even in the countries with high overall vaccine coverage, to look at who isn't getting vaccinated, because sadly those are the people getting sickest and those are the people dying.
Is it largely those who are unvaccinated, or is there also a high number of breakthrough infections? And does that point to the idea that maybe societal behaviour is not what it was?
Indeed, this is the other problem. So people think, okay, I'm vaccinated, I can't transmit, I can do what I like. That's not the case. These vaccines are very, very good at protecting against ill, sickness and death once the virus is in your body. So it can be in your body and you can transmit it to somebody else when you're not sick or not even feeling sick. Mm. So we still have to behave in a way that assumes we are infectious. And that's the way we've been behaving all the time. And that's the struggle, because people are really, really sick of the restrictions. And I'm not saying we should all be in lockdown, but we need to behave in a way that prevents infection. So keep up the distancing, avoid the crowding, really ventilate our closed spaces and wear those masks.
I know that you'll be reluctant to talk individually about the measures that are going to be prescribed by individual countries, but I suppose here in Ireland and in a lot of other places in Western Europe, we seem to be reaching something of a point where vaccinations has now been available to as many people who want to get it, that if you're not vaccinated by now, it appears that it's not for the want of unavailability. It's merely that those people have decided not to get vaccinated. In Ireland, we have something of an uptake rate of 92%, I think, among the adult population. And yet we have a situation where we're now recording more cases than we've done at any time since January, which is when we were in a full lockdown with basically no vaccinations. And people will begin to wonder, at what point can you ever begin to stand down the likes of distancing or hand hygiene if Ireland already has 92% of vaccination and we don't seem to be getting any better case numbers wise?
So the critical thing to be looking at is what's happening in your hospitals, and what's happening, are people still dying? Because the crucial thing that we're all trying to achieve is to reduce the effect of this virus, you know, the fact it's decimating populations now and putting enormous pressure on the health system and on the health workers. If your hospitals are not so full, if the death rate is reducing, then you can look at reducing the measures. That is a really critical thing. Cases are important because it tells you that transmission's going on and it tells you where it's going on. But the really crucial thing is How is your health system? Have you got any slack in the health system? You're coming into winter, so you need spare room for all the other things as well.
Well, then, on the Irish front, then, we're in a situation where, as of last night, we have a nationwide intensive care bed stock of around 300 or so. As of last night, there were 71 patients with COVID in intensive care, and there were only 11 vacant beds nationwide. Now, I know that that's a source of some concern for the government, because it means that there is very little slack in case the COVID situation deteriorates much worse. But again, it sort of begs the question as to what exactly the country can do when we already have such a high vaccine uptake rate among adults, and yet hospitals are almost full.
So again, that means too many people, as you said before, too many people are getting infected. So the message has to be, everyone has to take responsibility for not infecting everybody else. So again, those boring measures, the social distancing, the masking, the being obsessional about hygiene, obsessional about keeping the ventilation, not being in crowded spaces. And I know that's even harder in winter, but these things have to continue. Unfortunately, the message was, oh, I'm vaccinated, it's all good. That happens in the movies, but in real life, that's not how it works, especially with a new virus like this.
We'll get to questions of vaccine equity in a minute, because I know that there's debates around the world as to whether developed populations should have access to a booster. But just to sound out that final point, again, everyone say that it's sensible to try and do whatever you can to stop the spread of the virus from one person to another, irrespective of whether they're vaccinated or not. But I wonder whether the WHO has any vision in mind as to what the end of a pandemic looks like, or at what point COVID just becomes endemic. Because if you're in a country like Ireland and you've got 92% vaccine uptake among adults, and you still have to think about not having mass gatherings or still keeping social distancing or trying to avoid crowded settings, people will wonder then, when can you ever contemplate getting back to normality?
So indeed, that is something we are looking at. How do you decide at what point you can say, okay, we'll be considering this no longer an emergency? Now, endemic means that you've got virus circulating. It doesn't mean that you can just say, oh, it's fine, I'm not worried about this virus at all. It means you still watch it from a public health point of view. But it does mean that you go back to, in some way, you know, a less emergency situation. But to achieve that, I think we need to make big changes in how we organise our societies. This has been something, this virus capitalised on the way we live, on the fact that we crowd ourselves together in all sorts of situations, in workspaces, in our housing, in our transport. So we also have to look right now, before we get to the point where we say, okay, it's become such a lesser threat that we can say this pandemic is no longer the emergency it is, we have to be ready with a better way of living so that this virus doesn't get a chance, but also the next one doesn't get a chance.
Oh, so does that suggest then that it would have to be more than just an interim thing, that it's not that you just sort of restrict mass gatherings for a little while, for a year or a summer until you get it an endemic, that you maybe have to consider permanent changes to how people gather, or whether people ever cram into music venues or sports stadiums and the like?
Certainly. If there's one thing this virus has taught us, is that the way we were living gave an opportunity for a respiratory pathogen to do this damage. So we need to, in respect of all the people who've lost their lives, we need to look at how we can enjoy ourselves together, but safely. And one of the interesting things is, in the last 18 months, we've seen virtually no flu. Now, we all accepted flu as something that came every season, yet the measures we've all taken have actually meant that the flu virus had no chance to transmit itself among us. Now, of course, there have been lockdowns during that period, but it hasn't just been lockdown. It's been the way in which people have genuinely respected the measures, and most people have been terrific about this.
But I suppose the difference between this and the flu is that this is much more transmissible than the flu. And I'm going to imagine that there's a lot of people listening now who are probably going to be a little bit disheartened at the idea that, despite some Western societies like the United Kingdom, for example, basically going back to normal, at least within England, that you're advocating that maybe there shouldn't ever be a return to the normality that we previously understood.
Well, let's look at the normality and what we can change to still enjoy the normality. So I'm not saying that everybody's going to have to spend all their time standing behind little yellow lines on the ground and constantly wearing a mask. You know, this is, that is something that's very difficult for people to do. Though in Asia, for instance, ever since they had SARS in Hong Kong, you'll see people, if they feel that they've got cold or anything, they will wear a mask while they're out and about because they don't want to transmit it to other people. So there are some behavioral changes that you can make that will work. I'm not saying, again, that in European societies, people are very uncomfortable about masks. So that's not necessarily what you would do. But you can look at how you can make some changes that make life livable and enjoyable and also safer and healthier.
Okay. On the question of vaccine boosters, and there's a big societal debate going on, not only here in Ireland, but in other parts of the Western world as well, about whether to start rolling out booster shots to segments of the population who may already have the benefit of what was previously considered full vaccination, and whether it's ethical to start using a finite supply of vaccines, given that there's so much of the world which is yet to receive anything at all right now. Where does the WHO stand on that?
So, yes, we are very concerned about use of a finite amount of vaccine for people who don't really need the extra dose. Now, there's a bit of a confusion between boosters and what we call a third primary dose. It's for some people, their immune response to the first two for in most vaccines, sometimes it's just one, but was not strong enough. So we do agree with having a third primary dose in certain groups. That's people who are very immunocompromised, people who are very elderly. I'm talking about in the 80s and so on, and or people who have received the Sinovac and Sinopharm. We looked at those vaccines, and we our SAGE group of experts decided that the Sinopharm, Sinovac vaccines do need the third dose. So, but the booster, just because there seemed to be this idea that somehow immunity was waning because of the increased transmission, there is no evidence that's supporting that at the moment. And we want to see the two primary doses given in the rest of the world before the boosters are distributed widely.
There is a debate going on in Ireland right now, not only about giving extra doses to those who are immunocompromised and also to those who are aged over 60, but also to healthcare workers, because they in the main would obviously be very dangerous if they were to become carriers of COVID-19 to other vulnerable populations. But in Ireland, a lot of those people received AstraZeneca, and it's not seen as having quite the same level of protection against the Delta variant of the virus. How would you feel about those people, those healthcare workers on the front lines, being given a third dose of perhaps an mRNA vaccine to top them up?
Certainly, healthcare workers are top in our priority list of people who need to be vaccinated and need to be fully protected, not just because, as you were saying, they could carry and transmit the virus, but also they are the ones most at risk of being infected because they see people likely to be carrying the virus every day. But we are not seeing the data that suggests that a young and healthy healthcare worker who's already had the full course would need to have an extra dose at this stage.
So you're not seeing anything that would clinically at this point argue the case for a young, fully vaccinated healthcare worker being given a further dose?
Not at this case, but we have convened a group to really examine that, again, looking at the data as it evolves. And that will happen in the next couple of weeks. But currently, none of the data we've examined has supported that yet.
Obviously, it's understandable that there would be a desire from the WHO to have as many vaccines as possible distributed to the developing world, into areas that don't have the same penetration as Europe and North America does. But I've heard the argument being made that, in a way, that there's a certain amount of, it's like the economics argument about sunk costs, that even if you've got some people in the Western world who have, you know, two doses of whatever their vaccine is, that if they don't have very good or very effective coverage, and if a third dose could give them very good protection, then you would almost be wasting the first two doses by not giving them a third to complete the course.
So that's an interesting argument. But again, as I said, we're looking at the data and it shows good protection, and even against the Delta variant. But I think one of the confusions is governments and people managing societies are hoping somehow to stop transmission via vaccination. And at the moment, the vaccines we have are designed really to stop the severe illness and death. So there's a bit of a confusion about what you're vaccinating for. And so, again, going into the sort of the booster approach is really a distraction from our main job, is to get everybody vaccinated first of all, with the all around the world, with the full primary course. Make sure that there is enough supply around the world to get everybody vaccinated with the full primary course, so that we can stop this virus from spending a lot of time in our bodies, and therefore getting a chance to develop an even more effective variant. But the other thing we need to do to stop the transmission is the old-fashioned measures, and those are the things that people are sick of, and those are the things they're sort of begging their governments to change.
Interesting times. We're going to have to leave it there. Margaret Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization, joining us from Geneva this morning. Thank you very much for your time on the record.